Hey, y'all, Scott here for Rye Guys T-shirts. Rye Guys, that's WRYGuys.com. Great, irreverent, thought-provoking T-shirts upholding a pro-freedom perspective. Inspired by such classic humorists as Mark Twain, H.L. Mencken, and Oscar Wilde, they invoke the wit and wisdom of the past to satirize modern myths. These high-quality shirts for men and women look good and feel good, and they make great gifts. Use the coupon code SCOTT for 15% off. Rye Guys T-shirts at RYGuys.com. That's WRYGuys.com. All right, you guys, Scott Horton Show. Full archives at scotthorton.org. Follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show over at the Libertarian Institute as well, of course. All right, we got Phil Giraldi on the line. Again, former CIA officer, former DIA officer, executive director of the Council for the National Interest, and regular writer for UNS.com and the American Conservative magazine. And there's a couple here at the American Conservative now. This one's almost just the preface at this point now. Debunking Trump's casus belli. The next one, this is the real one, the comprehensive study. Did Assad order the Syrian gas attack? Once again, actual intelligence seems sparse. Again, that's at theamericanconservative.com. Welcome back to the show, Phil. How are you?
I'm fine, Scott. How about you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us again on the show. I guess you know the last time we spoke, we made news here. That interview got quite a bit of play because of what you were reporting, you were hearing from intelligence and military sources about what they thought about the Syrian gas attack. So I guess before we get into what we've learned since then, can you just rehash real quick? That was the day of the strike. That was approximately, 9 hours or something before the cruise missile strike. You were on this show saying that the intelligence does not hold up.
Yeah, there's been kind of a major gap between what the perception of the Trump administration and what the people who I would describe as on the ground, both in Washington and in the Middle East, are saying what they've seen and what their perceptions are. And in particular, you and I were talking about people that were directly involved with, drones and satellites and AWACS and what they call the geospatial systems that monitor what's going on in the Middle East. And they were saying that essentially the narrative that this had been a gas attack by Syria, carried out by Syria using sarin and everything, just didn't wash based on what they had seen and what they were hearing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, one of the most important points, you mentioned this right up at the beginning of your article here, of the latest article. You refer to Gareth Porter's piece at Truth Out from last week, where he says, we know now, he's got a source very close to the intelligence services saying, I think the same thing that you were hearing as well, that the Russians called the Americans on the phone over the deconfliction line, and they said, hey, we're about to launch an airstrike on this building. That would seem sort of right there to throw cold water all over the idea that a gas bomb was dropped by that Russian plane at all. It sounds like it fits just with, that seems to fit just with what the Russians claim all along, which was that they hit this warehouse, which of course also goes along with some of the other reporting, as Gareth Porter notes, and I think you note this in your article as well. The New York Times had one eyeball witness, a 14-year-old girl, didn't say anything about a gas bomb landing in the middle of the street. She said a bomb hit a one-story house and a big gas cloud came from that.
There seems to be plenty of evidence debunking the official White House narrative on this. And, those things you just cited are two instances. And Gareth, of course, did a very comprehensive article debunking a lot of it, and also talking with the professor at MIT who debunked, I think, the rest of it. It's quite an incredible story. It makes one think of Iraq all over again. You never thought that they would pull this again, but apparently they have. And I've been hearing some new stuff, which this is straight to you from what I've been hearing, that the intelligence community is kind of upset over the way this whole thing was handled, that there was an attempt to make it look like the intelligence community had worked 24 hours and come up with this conclusion. Absolutely, it was Syria, but nothing like that happened. CIA analysts, in fact, were looking at what available evidence they had and saying, no, there is no confirmable case that Syria carried out this attack. And then, of course, the director of CIA, Pompeo, immediately gets on the White House wagon to say, oh, yeah, we were working really hard and we came up with the right conclusion based on what we saw on CNN, apparently. The whole story smells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is pretty notable, isn't it? You're a former CIA officer, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, went on TV and said, well, you know, we have these open source pictures.
Yeah.
He didn't cite his own professionals. Now, let's go back almost 4 years then to the summer of 2013, Phil, when we already know what was a false flag sarin gas attack by Al-Qaeda and their friends, the Turks. Then we know that there was a government intelligence assessment, a White House intelligence assessment, which, you know, you instructed us at the time. There's no such thing as that, right? They made that up. And the reason they made that up then, as you reported in the American Conservative, was because there were at least, a handful of CIA analysts who were prepared to resign if CIA leadership, John Brennan, et cetera, had attempted to go ahead and claim that they were making these claims when in fact they were not. I guess they got burned bad enough over Iraq and a couple of other things now. They really didn't want to go along, and they even put their foot down. Now, in this case, we have another White House assessment. This one was put out by the National Security Council at the White House, still not the CIA. And you're saying that CIA officers, CIA analysts are upset about this. Are they threatening to resign again like they were in 2013?
I haven't heard that. I have heard that there was a lot of dissent going on because they felt that Pompeo had misrepresented the whole thing. And, of course, the White House had misrepresented the whole thing. There was the repeated references that this was an intelligence community document, an intelligence community consensus, implying that it was all 17 agencies that are part of the intelligence community. I mean, this is nonsense. There wasn't enough time to do that, apart from anything else. I don't care how long they worked until, after midnight. This just doesn't make any sense. It was one of my first observations when I saw this thing kind of moving forward. I was saying there's no way in hell that they could have known this with the kind of assertion that Donald Trump was making that quickly. There are too many threads that have to be pulled in and looked at and analyzed, and bits of information and satellite photography and sensor photography from the AWACS and things like that. And there was no possibility that they could have known this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just in terms of in the time it took before they made their official pronouncements and all their
absolutely
declarative statements. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
absolutely
that was the thing. There was no gray area, right? They didn't say, well, we're pretty confident. They say, oh, we know, just like John Kerry back in 2013. We know.
Yeah. And the fact is, the concluding paragraph in my article, where I run through all the evidence and everything like that, were by Stephen Cohen from Princeton, saying, look, the normal procedure on this is if something like this happens, you call for an investigation, you work it through the UN, and you see what it comes up with. And then you make a political decision on what kind of consequences there should be if somebody like the Syrian government has actually carried this out. And that's the perfectly sensible way to do that, but instead we yet again see the U.S. government going off the deep end on stuff that it cannot possibly know what had happened at that point.
Mm-hmm. And now, it's interesting to me that too that they're saying, well, I guess this proves that Assad lied and he kept his chemical weapons and he fooled John Kerry and Barack Obama and the United Nations. And it's if you watch TV, that's certainly the way they talk about it. But it seems like a really great case of question begging. Everybody always uses that term wrong. But in this case, they really are assuming their conclusion perfectly. That, look, the sarin matches. That was one I saw on Twitter this morning from Reuters. The sarin matches last time. That proves Assad did it. Well, the sarin matches last time. That proves that Erdogan did it. And now, exactly. And Jelani did it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You've got it. And the evidence for Assad having retained his chemical weapons basically comes from Israel. The Israeli government is, and the intelligence service is the one, are the ones that are floating that idea. And, of course, they have an agenda. The whole thing is so ridiculous. There was Boris Johnson, foreign secretary of Britain, is claiming that this was sarin, or how do you put it, a sarin-like chemical. And I was thinking, reading that, uh-huh. And then there was an attack on him saying, have you tested the provenance? You know, apparently sarin has a signature, as you were just pointing out, that showing that it was the same stuff in 2013. That means it comes from Turkey. And they were questioning Boris Johnson, have you checked the provenance on this? Have you checked the signature to see where it comes from, or what kind of fingerprint it has? And, of course, they've done none of that.
Right. And what's funny is last time it was the Brits at Porton Down. They were the ones who said this isn't Assad sarin.
Right.
Right. Right. From Seymour Hersh's article.
Yeah. But now we have, Boris Johnson, who's a certified lunatic in charge of British foreign policy. And, he's willing to say anything.
Right. Now, it makes sense in American domestic politics that the Republicans can say, oh, well, the Democrats got duped on that. But I saw John Kerry come out in support of this thing,
right.
the missile strikes and all of that. And so I would really like to see a reporter ask John Kerry, so are you saying then that you are the biggest fool on the planet and that you let this scumbag Assad pull one over on you, get over on you, and hide chemical weapons? Here's a quote of you saying, mission accomplished. You got rid of all his chemical weapons, John Kerry. So which is it? Now, I guess he'd stick with the lie and say, I guess he did fool me, because it's more important for him, the narrative that Assad is guilty. But I'd like to at least see him, quote, admit that.
Yeah, and Susan Rice, in fact, endorsed it too when the destruction of the chemicals was completed, and the destruction was carried out on U.S. ships, and the U.S. was supervising the whole process, and the U.S. government declared several times that all the chemicals were destroyed, and then now they're coming out with an argument that, well, there were certain categories of chemicals that weren't included in this. This is the oiliest stuff I've seen, since Iraq, where they're trying to twist the narrative to make it fit the. They're not even presenting any facts. They're essentially twisting what they are calling facts to support a narrative which is essentially invented.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. I saw a thing, too, at Moon of Alabama, where Bernard there was concluding that this must have been a chlorine cloud that killed these people, because one of the effects of sarin is that it causes one to lose their control of their bowels. And here's photos of this hospital, this rescue center, with victims everywhere, and yet the floors are clean. And nobody's pants are soiled. There's dead bodies everywhere. But nobody is covered in this filth, which if it had been sarin, they would. Now, I don't know if what effects chlorine is supposed to have in that case exactly. But he was saying it made a lot more sense to think that this was a chlorine cloud that got them than sarin.
Yeah, and plus sarin is invisible. And chlorine is a cloud.
Right.
So, if they're saying there was a cloud of chemicals, then it wasn't sarin. And also, all this photo evidence and stuff like that, it's all the area is controlled by Al-Ansar. It was controlled at the time of the attack. It's still controlled by Al-Ansar. They're the ones producing these photos. They're the ones producing the evidence. We don't even know when these photos were taken. Right. I mean, they could be 3 years old. We don't have a clue about any of this information that's coming out of Syria, because the information is being controlled by the people who themselves have a certain agenda and want to implicate the Syrian government in this attack. Mm-hmm. And you know, that can't be said too often, because basically you don't do these kinds of things unless you have a motive. And the motives that are being presented for al-Assad having done it, essentially it was, the first was the stupidest one I've ever heard. It was to test the United States, which 2 days before had said that they weren't any longer trying to remove them. So he was going to test them. And then the other one was that he was going to intimidate the Syrian people by doing this. It's just, you know, this is a constant search for evidence to support this story where there is no real evidence to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the one about, oh, so America likes me now, huh? We'll see about that. I'll cross their red line and make them regime change my ass. I mean, come on, really? I don't know. I'm thinking about it really hard. I'm trying to figure out a way that makes any sense whatsoever, and it's just not working out for me.
Nor for me.
Now, I can see, and I have seen this argument before, and it's a little bit convenient, and it goes something like this. You Western white people with your Orientalist view, got me. You just don't understand the way it works over there, and the way it works over there is Assad, in fact, had turned around the al-Nusra offensive, and he was beating them back. He was kicking their butt. But this was like a coup de grace. It was psychological war. It was him saying, you know, not only will I kill you, but this is how sick and tired I am of fighting you people. Here's some poison gas and see how you like that. Because it you know, just like, and I just finished reading, I'm sure you saw this in The Intercept a couple of months back, about SEAL Team 6 committing war crimes all across Afghanistan, murdering people, disfiguring their corpses and stuff. And they say, this is to intimidate them so that they'll know not to mess with us. Which, of course, is stupid logic. It's crazy. That doesn't work. That just creates more enemies and hardens your enemies' resolve if you do that. But it's easy to see why some idiot on SEAL Team 6 would think that that's a good idea, that they'll never mess with us again after this. Well, so maybe Assad is an idiot, too. Maybe it doesn't make sense to you and me, but maybe it makes sense to him to, as you put it there, scare the Syrian people. Everybody, you better just quit resisting me now, because I'll poison gas your ass.
Yeah, it's just an argument that makes no sense. But even if you accept, hey, it might be true, let's see the evidence. And this is what has been so depressing about everything that's been going on. You know, Russiagate, where you're talking about that dossier that the British intelligence service produced on Trump, with going back as far as Iraq, and now this, and the two times that we're talking about possible use of gas by the Syrians. There's never any evidence. It's always like it's innuendo. I can believe anything, you know. I mean, I did some goofy stuff when I was overseas, and I can believe anything is possible. But the fact is, if you're going to launch $100 million worth of cruise missiles at a country where you're not at war, then you better have some good evidence to back up what you're doing. And they don't even seem to think that is necessary anymore. I think Andrew Bacevich said, Chance Freeman said that, you know, we're a country that's become psychotic. That basically we set our own rules, we don't care what anybody else says, and we do what we want. And I guess that's a definition of being psychotic. And it's unfortunately true.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you there, too. I mean, the level of consensus and groupthink about everything that's wrong in Washington, D.C. is, you know, it's basically unbreakable, right? There's nothing that you could do to get anyone on any of the last five National Security Councils or the last two or three to stop and think for a minute about, you know, and for that matter, what it looks like to the rest of the world. Think about that, where the Americans, they do nothing but lie and kill. You know, I saw a meme yesterday on Twitter where at the top it was the Avengers, right? The Incredible Hulk and Captain America and everything. And it says, what Americans think the world sees them as. And then at the bottom is the Emperor and Darth Vader and some stormtroopers. And it says how they really see us, you know? You know, I think the American people actually probably get that now. But in D.C., they don't. They really still think they're right.
Yeah.
That's the dangerous part. Like, I keep saying this. I know I'm beating a dead horse, but at least Obama knew he was lying.
I took comfort in that. That this is a guy who I know understands the truth as he does the wrong thing anyway. But with Trump and this team, I mean, who knows? Like we talked about before with James Mattis saying, really sounding like a complete kook, saying, well, gee, you ever notice that ISIS never attacks Iran? I guess they must be in on it together or something. Like, this guy should be out of there. He should be absolutely fired. I mean, I can find you a Democrat in the House who understands better than that.
Yeah, and McMaster is not a whole lot better as far as I can tell. The problem is that, you know, I once had an argument with a congressman, and I was saying, you know, the problem with Congress is that everything that happens there happens inside a bubble. And you see things in a certain way, and there's a groupthink, and there's a consensus on how Congress perceives events. And I said, for that reason, you're never going to understand anything. And of course, he didn't like that comment and unloaded on me. But the fact is, I truly believe that Washington operates in a consensus bubble that has no connection with reality. They throw in enough what they think are facts every once in a while to make it look plausible. But we have an emperor's new clothes type government where everybody sees what's wrong with it except the people who are on the inside.
Right. Well, you know, this is just like my discussion yesterday with Yakov Hirsch about Israel. This is the exact same thing. It's just like Ron Paul said back when in the big Giuliani argument, which was exactly 10 years ago, right around something like that, right? Or next month. He said, look, if you think that you can just keep doing whatever it is that you want without consequences, then you're doing that. You believe that at your own peril. You're putting yourself in danger. This is, you know, if we're not honest with ourselves about what it is that we're doing, we're going to be making mistakes. We're going to do the wrong thing and hurt ourselves. It's the same thing with the Israelis right now. Everything that they say about what it is they're doing and why is a lie. And they're so deep in the lies now, they don't even know which way's up anymore. They wouldn't know how to tell you the truth if they wanted to. And it's the same thing here. And they've created this untenable apartheid situation in Israel. We've created a situation here, which I guess they killed all the Indians, so we don't have to worry about the apartheid thing as much. But we certainly are creating a situation where the entire world sees us as that psychopath that you were just describing there, sees us as the greatest danger to life on Earth and all the consequences that come with that. We do this at our own peril. And, you know, at the not least, in inspiring continued terrorist attacks against American civilian targets. You know, for years, Phil, we would say, man, it's a miracle that we've had so few terrorist attacks in this country with all the intervention. At some point, these chickens are going to keep coming back home to roost here. It took a little while, but boy, once it got started, we've had about 10 or 12 of them now that were not FBI put-ons, but were, I don't know if you count Boston or not. But, you know, we've had quite a few of these now, and it seems like we're just going to keep having them because the attitude is we can keep doing whatever we want.
Yeah, that's unfortunately it. I mean, there's a pathology that operates here that essentially is destroying us as a nation. And, you know, and simultaneously as we're creating havoc overseas, we're impoverishing ourselves here, and we're also making a police state domestically. It's just like, you know, it's like I've reached a point where I don't want to get out of bed in the morning because I don't want to read what happened, you know, the previous night, because I know it'll be just something awful out of the White House or out of Congress or overseas, and it's just depressing as hell.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. I know, every time my phone, you know, dings a text message, I think, oh no. You know, something just got blown up somewhere. I better race back to my computer screen here. All right. All right. So one last big point here before I let you go, Phil. Well, actually two more. Is there a discrepancy in how many missiles they shot and how many landed? And does that mean that the Russians blasted them out of the air with radio waves?
You know, I don't know. There are obviously, as you are aware, there are a number of stories in terms of how many hit the actual air base, how many landed in the desert. I think the accepted number for how many were shot off was 59, but I've seen 60. So I would suspect the Russians, if I were a Russian and I had the ability using electronic intelligence to interfere with the guidance systems, that would have been a fun thing to do. And also, there's another theory going around that the Russians basically let the attack happen because they were able to passively test the efficacy of their S-300 and 400 systems to deal with this in a future incident. So actually, it may have benefited the Russians in terms of calibrating their own system. So I don't know. I don't have an answer to it, but maybe someday we'll find out.
Yeah, I wondered about that too, that if they have the electronic warfare capability to just turn those things off or hijack them and redirect them or make them fall out of the sky or anything like that, that maybe they wouldn't want to reveal that now. Maybe that's a secret better kept close to the vest for in case they ever really need it. America starts sending Tomahawk cruise missiles with H-bombs in them toward Russia, something like that, rather than show their hand at this point. But then again, it sounded like 20-something of them didn't make it to their target, so something happened to them. And I doubt it doesn't sound like they were shot down with bullets or missiles or anything like that. So must have been jamming, must have been something. Or maybe Raytheon just makes a really crappy product, and they were just falling out of the sky anyway because it's a captive market, so who cares, right?
Yeah, I'll buy into that one, yep.
All right, one more. Folk coming forward. What about these CIA, these military, these national reconnaissance, somebody, whoever's, what about them going public, going on the Maddow show, going on the Tucker show, going on TV, explaining that, yeah, no, I worked there and this isn't right. It seems pretty important, like maybe it'd be even worth giving up a career to do something like that if they could prevent this war from getting much worse, which could turn into the final war to end all wars for real.
I wouldn't count on it. I think that, it requires giving up a career, becoming unemployable at age 29 or something. The guys like Snowden are willing to do that. But most people will not. I suspect what you're going to see is, more leaks, secondhand leaks, like, for example, to the people that I hang around with, former intelligence officers who are connected with some of these people, you'll get some leaks in that direction. I think you'll get some leaks where some of these people just manage to get in touch with the media one way or another. I think you'll see some of that. I don't expect a big whistleblower to come out of this. But, remain optimistic. I would love to see it.
Yeah. Well, I think the standard call for whistleblowers is pretty obvious. We got young privates and specialists and sergeants and enlisted nobodies over there getting their legs and their genitals blown off in Afghanistan, riding around over there in the Islamic State right now, in Western Iraq and Eastern Syria, killing people and being killed and risking their lives. If these guys are willing to risk their actual lives in battle, then it seems to me a reasonable request from the American people that CIA analysts stand up and do the right thing and risk a little bit of prison time, risk losing their ability to pay their mortgage over the short term in order to do the right thing to prevent something like that. And in fact, and we're not talking about riding around playing the IED lottery in Afghanistan here. We're talking about the possibility of war with Russia or the possibility of a much worse war with the government of Syria as opposed to just against the Islamic State in Eastern Syria. So this ain't nothing. Those CIA analysts, they're up there serving their country and all that. Sometimes that means quitting your job and telling the truth to the American people because your job is doing the wrong thing. As they know, as you're saying, that's how they feel about it this week, too. Hey, Pompeo, don't go and cite me. Go up there and cite CNN to CNN. that's a pretty big step they're taking already, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I just say I would love to see it. We'll see how this plays out, and I would think if the Trump administration continues on its trajectory, which is basically to ignore any kind of factual advice, there will be people I think coming very close to that line. I would like to see it.
Yeah, me too. All right, well, thanks very much for all your great journalism, Phil. Great work here.
Thanks very much, Scott.
All right, you guys, that's the great Phil Giralli. He's the executive director of the Council for the National Interest. That is the America First lobby in Washington, D.C.
right there. He writes at uns.com, at theamericanconservative.com as well. Again, a former CIA and DIA counterterrorism officer. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. Thank you very much for listening. ScottHorton.org/interviews for the interviews. ScottHorton.org/show for the Q&A stuff. Tweet me, hashtag SHSQA, and I'll get to your Q&A stuff for you there sooner or later. And check out the Institute, the Libertarian Institute at LibertarianInstitute.org. All the interviews get posted there first.
Hey, all, Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottHortonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottHortonShow. And thanks, y'all. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.